Our reading for today is a poem entitled Testimony by Rebecca Baggett. I want to tell you that the world is still beautiful. I tell you that despite children raped on city streets, shot down in schoolrooms, despite the slow poison seeping from old and hidden sins into our air, soil, and water, despite the thinning film that encloses our aching world, despite my own terror and despair, I want you to know that spring is no small thing, that the tender grasses curling like a baby's fine hairs around your fingers are a recurring miracle. I want to tell you that the river rocks shine like God, that the crisp voices of the orange and gold October leaves are laughing at death. I want to remind you to look beneath the grass, to note the fragile hieroglyphs of ant, snail, beetle. I want you to understand that you are no more or no less necessary than the brown recluse, the ruby-throated hummingbird, the humpback whale, the profligate mimosa. I want to say, like Neruda, that I am waiting for a great and common tenderness, that I still believe we are capable of attention, and that anyone who notices the world must want to save it. What an interesting experience it has been over these last couple of days to sit in my office, an office that I know I will soon be vacating, and flip through the pages of my past sermons. If you saw it, you know that the published blurb about today's message was quoting a kind of a half-hearted joke among clergy people that says that every preacher really only has one good sermon in them, that they just repackage it and recycle it under different titles and with different words over and over again. And so, since this is my last shot at this, so to speak, I wanted to reflect on what my one message might have been. What is it that I've been trying to say over these last 5 years, if there is any truth in that saying, each time that I've had the privilege of standing behind this pulpit with you? Remembering some of the sermons that I've done really brought back the sensations of each of the messages, and a few stood out particularly. I'm not certain why. There was the one about Mr. Rogers and the beautiful day in the neighborhood, and a lot of you really liked that one, but then who could quibble with the profundity and inspiration of Fred Rogers? And then there was the one from so long ago that was titled, Have You Touched the Earth Today? That one seemed to really strike a chord, and I remember that the special music that day was tailor-made to perfection for the service. There are a couple of sermons to honor some of my personal heroes like Rachel Carson and Eddie Hillesum. And of course, I found that chunks of wisdom from Taoism and Buddhism frequently found their way into my messages. In these 5 years, we have shared several of my personal life challenges and learnings, and you have honored my stories, like about the huge and lasting impact of my father's life and death on me, and about how mental health issues have affected my family and, as we know, so many others in this community. We've talked together about our shared yearning to be of use in this life and wondered how it is that we might best do that as individuals and hand in hand as a congregation. And, of course, we've talked about this faith of ours, this Unitarian Universalism. It is a faith that I consider to be powerfully hopeful, a saving faith. And we've considered the ways that it challenges us each and every day, if this is what we believe, how then shall we live? And as I sat at my desk with all of those file folders spread out, and as I held the images of your faces, I looked within once again, peering into my heart as I have done so many times, and tried to think, what is it that I carry in here that might be worthy of sharing with you today? This extraordinary faith community that you are. What might be worthy? There's so much that I wish I had the eloquence to say. And in the the process of sorting and reflecting some of those recurring themes, I have to say, actually did emerge. So I don't really know if it's that simple or not, but it does seem that my messages frequently found their way back to one primary thesis and three subpoints, which was an interesting revelation for me. The primary, or that umbrella notion, if you will, is that I believe absolutely, positively, that living with an open heart creates a peace-filled and connected existence that is far more rewarding than any possessions we might garner, far more satisfying than approaching life from fear or the desire to control or to outdo others. For me, living a life of compassion is the only avenue to genuine inner peace. And then, from that soft-hearted, compassionate place, springs those three recurring subpoints that one way or another seem to have again and again showed up in my sermons. In a simplified version, they are: treasure this precious, irretrievable life of yours, all the moments of your life. Love others with undaunted passion and compassion, and extend that very same tenderness and appreciation to your own being. Cherish life, cherish others, cherish yourself. One thing I know for sure that I want to tell you, like Rebecca Baggett did in that poem, that I have the most fervent belief that overall life is a beautiful and exquisite journey, even though it is often a very unpleasant one. None of us could possibly be unaware of all the enormous pain that ebbs and flows through our days as we span our life on this earth. We have all absorbed disappointment beyond measure, loss of relationships that pierce our souls and snatch our breath away, life events that make us feel like maybe we actually might not be able to do this. We all know how it feels to reach for some much-desired prize in life, like maybe entrance to a great school or a promotion or an award or some much-hoped-for relationship, and watch as it slips right through our hands. We all know what it's like to lay awake in the night's silence with tears pooling in our sleepless, exhausted eyes. There's no escaping the truth that such things are the burden of our conscious existence. And yet, we also know what it's like to experience the absolute contentment of watching the unique heavenly glories of one of our gorgeous, slow, gold-pink sunsets here. We've known the overflowing joy from our heart as a loved one returns home in that first trembling hug when between you, you silently say, "I love you so much. Welcome back. I hope you stay forever." We know the unsurpassed delight of feeling a small child's hand on our cheek, and we watch their dancing eyes as they wordlessly share their utter gladness that you and they are alive in this one sparkling moment together. So those kinds of pain and those exhilarations of life are woven back and forth constantly throughout our days, in and out, every day of our lives. And through our years on earth, we learn to persist because we know that tragedy at some undecipherable moment so often takes a magical turn and somehow becomes an unexpected, unplanned, undreamed of joy in our lives. Circumstances so often resolve in ways that we could not have imagined. I sometimes say that our imaginations just are not expansive enough to successfully write our own life stories with all the creative twists and turns that they take. In retrospect, we can see it. But when we're in the midst of all that turbulence and swirl, it's terribly hard to see. But belief in this is a great source of hope for me. Life has taught me that when those inevitable and unwanted events invade my futile attempts to cling to stability and the status quo, that the very best response I can muster is to actually welcome that which has unavoidably and clearly become mine to hold, Whether I wanted it or not, it has become one of those threads that make up the fabric of my existence. Whether invited or not, it has insinuated itself onto the pages of the story of my life. And I better make the best of it. And I do believe that life is trustworthy. That if I can just keep breathing and keep turning back to my center, if I can keep my heart soft and open, that somehow, and I don't precisely know how, but somehow things always do get better. Oh, like you, my life has held scores of situations and events that are not at all what I would have chosen or designed or requested for myself. Some might say that I have had more than my share. And I might be tempted to buy into that, except that I have sat with too many of you as you have poured out your own sorrows and struggles. And I know in the long run that we all pretty much stack up evenly. Like it or not, our very existence teaches us that the heavens shower us all with the same warmly welcomed sunshine and the same run-for-cover thunderstorms. None of us can escape that fickle finger of fate. We all know that too well. And yet, hope is ever present. It is the core of all the religious teachings. All the sages advise us that even knowing all that we do over and over again, the poets and the wise ones encourage us to create enough space in our hearts to fall in love with life again, to see and experience and cherish our moments, all the moments of this existence, because it will be over soon enough. And this very moment that is in front of us is indeed all that we really have. Is life worthy of being cherished even after horrible disappointment? Yes, emphatically, I say yes. Even after grief and tragedy? Absolutely yes, even then. Because life is not stagnant. Something lovely and joyous awaits, perhaps around the very next corner. In fact, there is some delight available right now, in every one of our nows, if we will just open our hearts to it. We know that our closed and troubled hearts feel the most weighty when we allow ourselves to be caught up in the tragic dramas that our minds write about what might happen tomorrow, how those days out there might unfold. Our fears about what might happen are stultifying and deadly. But when we can come back to this moment in which we currently are, when we can experience it with our whole being, we know that we have within us everything that we need for this moment. Our fears are all about the imaginary next ones. The beauty and the perfection of this moment in which we find ourselves is precious beyond belief. So as I reflect back, it is clear to me that one of my repetitive messages over the years has clearly been that I believe that life is to be cherished, and that it feels so very much better and it runs so very much more smoothly when we can steadfastly choose again and again to greet each new moment with a grateful, open heart, to discipline ourselves out of writing those potential stories that might happen tomorrow, and to come back to now. And if I can be present in each of our moments, if we can keep our hearts unafraid and welcoming and thankful, then the natural outcome of that is that we can extend to others a much greater degree of loving kindness. Open hearts are ones that recognize, and I mean truly see, and honor the experience of others. Open hearts know that we have not been singled out in life as the sole recipient of harsh circumstances. Open hearts know we are all in this together. Open hearts are not busy building defenses or making other people wrong. Open hearts know that in our final moments of this lifetime, the legacy that matters will be the one that is reflected not in our bank account, not in the number of initials after our name on our business cards, but our legacy will be how people speak of the ways that we touched their lives, how we made them feel when they were in our presence. That's what people will remember. As Maya Angelou so astutely pointed out, It is highly unlikely that folks will recall the particulars of what you may have said to them, but they will surely remember how you made them feel when they were with you. I was speaking of such things with a friend recently, and there was a kind of a magical moment between us when we simultaneously came to the same conclusion. It dawned on us right at the same time, the simplicity of this central point of life, that it truly is all about love. That's been said so very many times that I hesitate to repeat it here because I fear that it's so trite you might not take it seriously. But in my worldview, it really is what it's all about, this exchange of love with others. The degree of joys that our days can contain, the degree of our own life satisfaction, come from our capacity both to absorb and to offer love. It's the only answer that makes any sense to me. I once attended a workshop, and the speaker was talking about how to have deep and rewarding personal relationships. She said that one of the best things a person can do is to prefer happiness over rightness. By that, she meant that when those inevitable differences come along, choosing to be happy means that it may not be all that crucial to prove ultimately who was right or wrong in those small disagreements with the people that we love. We know that most of the time, those sorts of assessments in the long run matter very little. So choosing to be happy instead of victorious is a much wiser investment in our personal joy, and it helps us appreciate those precious moments of our lives. It's important to me, though, that you hear that in my estimation, choosing happiness over rightness and living a life that is centrally guided by love, those things are very different from being a pushover or a person who does not express his or her values or needs. The most loving thing to do in a situation may not always be the most pacifistic thing to do. It doesn't always mean placating or giving in to the other. Sometimes the most loving thing we can do is to draw a very clear boundary and set caring limits. But what people seem to often forget is that those boundaries and those limits can indisputably spring from a wide open, love-filled heart. Holding your heart open can mean that you definitely do speak your truth, and when you do it from a place of clarity and compassion, not rigidity and anger. So recapping here, it seems that the life lessons that have moved me the most that I have shared on these occasions, cherish your moments, cherish your relationships, and lastly, and I know this one is so often the hardest one, cherish your own being. Now, maybe the reason that so many of you enjoyed that Mr. Rogers sermon was that he was so skilled at reminding us of our own unique value. His cardiganed, peaceful presence told us that we are each uniquely beautiful and worthy and capable. So much of our internal struggles come not so much from a refusal to love the world. For some reason, that's often easier. It's an easier notion to accept than it is to love ourselves. Once again, this is so oft repeated that it may well feel unworthy to be said here. And yet, I know how many of you have let me glimpse into your hearts and to see your fears, that perhaps life has asked too much of you, that perhaps you are not up to the task that currently lies before you. There are so many messages from our youngest days that tell us, if only we were smarter or cuter or thinner or stronger or taller or better educated or more creative or more spiritual, anything other than what we are, if only then we could do this thing of life so much better. But that's so deeply wrongheaded. You are a unique expression of life. The ineffable spark of creation, whatever that actually is, has taken form in you in a way that it has not anywhere else. And there are gifts that only you have to offer to our needy world. It's a spiritual practice, I think, to look at ourselves unguardedly and to actually love what we see there. Not from a place of inflated egotism, but from realizing that this is it. This is all I've got to work with. And one of Fred Rogers' many quotes on this subject that he shared with the children is this. He said, "Knowing that we can be loved exactly as we are gives us all the best opportunity for growing into the healthiest of people." And in my estimation, that growing into the healthiest of people goes on until our very last breath. Fred Rogers was really a great guy. He did a lot of good in this world. Think of how differently our lives would feel on some occasions if we could truly internalize those messages of acceptance. So my three things: cherish life, cherish others, and the most difficult, cherish your very own being. And when the idea for this sermon came up, I had kind of hoped that as I looked back over my messages, I might find something a bit more profound or original than those three. But I guess they are so often repeated because even if we hear them 1,000 times, we're apt to forget 1,001 times. We forget over and over and over again. But if we were to successfully do those three things, my three cherishings, we might call them, we would no doubt grow into that category of wise people that are referred to in the call to gather. So let me share those words one more time. Wise people give themselves up to whatever the moment brings. They know that all things are in transition, and therefore they have nothing left to hold on to. No illusions in their mind, no resistances in their body. They don't think about their actions. Skillful choices flow from the core of their beings. They hold nothing back from life, and therefore, when the time comes, they are ready for death as a person is ready for sleep after a good day's work. May it be so for each one of us. Thank you. Thank you, each and every one. I do cherish you.